Welcome to Selah, a daily study in the Scriptures with Pastor Ray Viola. Today's passage contains the wise teaching of King Lemuel's mother. She advised him to avoid the pitfalls of excessive drinking and loose behavior. His mother encouraged him to stand for justice and to use his power to protect those who could not protect themselves. She also described the qualities of a woman that he should seek when looking for a wife. Please open your Bible to Proverbs 31 and listen as Pastor Ray Viola begins his study of this chapter.
Proverbs chapter 31. The words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. And the word prophecy speaks of a burden or a divine instruction. And in this context, it's not necessarily, as you well know, a prediction of the future. We do not know anything about King Lemuel other than his name means belonging to God. He is not in any recorded list of the kings of Judah or Israel. And perhaps like Timothy in 2 Timothy 1:5, Lemuel had a Jewish mother who taught him how to fear the Lord. And in this chapter, he's going to tell him, son, when it's your time to get married, I'm going to tell you about the kind of woman that you want to meet. And that's really what this whole chapter is all about. What, my son, and what the son of my womb, a term of special affection, and what the son of my vows, like Hannah in 1 Samuel chapter 1. She had dedicated her child to the Lord, and many of us have done the same thing. And here we find these beautiful, these endearing words that trace the close relation between this mother and her son. And so she begins to give him wisdom. Give not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroys kings. Two things about which this mother warned her son, the king. First was women. Now, ladies, don't give me those looks now. The king. In Deuteronomy 17, verse 17, it was said of the king that he should not multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away. Neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. And many times the kings would marry foreign women for political purposes. But multiplying foreign wives often was a cause of great destruction. 1 Kings 11, verses 1 through 10, King Solomon was destroyed as he literally gave his strength to women. Solomon's father, King David, suffered tragically when he gave his strength to Bathsheba, and it had an impact on his family for the rest of his life. And then he says in verse 4, the second thing for him to avoid. It is not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes strong drink, lest they drink and forget the law, and pervert the judgment of any of the afflicted. And so the second was intoxication. And the idea here is she tells him not to do anything that would cause your way of thinking to be not clear or sound. And that's really sound advice for anybody in any place of leadership or responsibility. The particular danger of drunkenness to a king lies in the tendency that it can cause you to have a clouded memory or a clouded sense of justice or injustice, either way. We saw in Proverbs chapter 20, verse 1, wine is a mocker and strong drink is raging, and whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown write, quote, stimulants and feeble reason pervert the heart and do not suit rulers who need clear and steady minds and well-governed affections. But then in verse 6 and in verse 7, we read, give strong drink unto him that is ready to perish, and wine unto those that be of heavy hearts. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more. And there in verse 6, it appears to refer to the use of wine as a means of medicine for a person that is ready to perish. And while the last half of verse 6 and verse 7 would be used in the same context of a person that is medicated for the cause of some kind of depression. Now, whenever you bring up the subject of alcohol in the Bible, you really, sometimes it's like walking or treading on thin ice, especially when you're standing before a group of people and you're talking and everybody's looking at you. And now what is he going to say? Well, I think we have to be very, very careful when it comes to the topic of alcohol. The legalist says that the Bible teaches that you cannot drink at all. The libertarian says that you can drink whenever you want, wherever you want, and if somebody is offended, tough luck. Well, those are two extremes. The Bible does not condemn the drinking of wine. It condemns drunkenness very, very clearly. But there is responsibility when it comes to that kind of a subject. In Romans chapter 14, verses 20 and 21, we read, "It is good neither to eat flesh, nor to drink wine, nor anything whereby your brother stumbles, or is offended, or is made weak." So there's the issue when it comes to drinking of wine or something like that, that you don't want to offend or stumble or make someone weak. And then Paul says, do you have faith, the faith that doesn't condemn you? Just have it to yourself. Don't flaunt it. That's really the idea here. Charles Spurgeon writes, "Those who fly to the bottle for consolation might as soon fly to hell to find a heaven. And instead of helping them to forget their poverty, drunkenness would only sink them more deeply into mire." He says in verse 8, "Open thy mouth for the dumb in the cause of all such as are appointed to destruction. Open thy mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy." A king or political ruler is to look out for and to speak out on behalf of those who are being abused or taken advantage of. And we see that happening, unfortunately, in many, many governmental types of leadership. And he's exhorted now. He's a king, and his mother's giving the king good wisdom. Open your mouth for the poor. Open your mouth for the needy. And then he jumps into the section that is called the section on the virtuous woman. And it does describe a virtuous woman. But when you read this, the context is a mom is sitting down with her son or sons and telling them, "Son, if you are looking to get married, I'm going to tell you the kind of woman that you should be looking for." Next to making a decision for Jesus Christ, the most important decision a Christian will make is the choice of their life's mate. In Proverbs chapter 12, verse 4, we read, "A virtuous woman is a crown to her husband." Proverbs 18:22 in the New King James Version says, "Who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord." In Proverbs 19, verse 14, "A prudent wife is from the Lord." And how true that is. A virtuous woman is a crown to her husband. And when God brings you that woman, you realize you have obtained a favor from the Lord. They're gifts from God. Ruth, in the book of Ruth, which in many Hebrew Bibles follows Proverbs chapter 31, is this kind of a wife. In this next section, each of the 22 verses, beginning with the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet in consecutive order. Proverbs 31:10, Aleph, Proverbs 31:11, Beth, Proverbs 31:12, Gimel, and so on to the end of the chapter, the last verse of which has the letter Tau. So this was one way that young children would actually learn the alphabet, and in learning the alphabet, grow up learning, this is the kind of gal I should be looking for. Wouldn't it be great if Proverbs 31 was blasted on all of these, you know, like TBS and all of these television stations. And hey, this is the kind of gal that our boys should be looking for. David Guzik writes, "This passage is traditionally understood as being addressed to women, but it is more accurately spoken by a woman to a man so he can know the character and the potential character of a good wife before marriage and value and praise his wife for her virtuous character once married. It is primarily a search list for a man and only secondarily a checklist for a woman." And she tells him, who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. And that is so true. Who can find a virtuous woman? We're going to find in this section that a virtuous woman's strength is in her relationship with and her fear of her God. Her price, her value is, you can't mark it. There's no way to place a value on her. That's what she's saying to him. The woman described in the rest of the chapter is rare and valuable. Her value is greater than what she does. Her value is in who she is. Her value is in her relationship with her God. The heart of her husband does safely trust in her so that he shall have no need of spoil. She's going to be prudent. Notice two words here in verse 11, heart and trust. A godly marriage, a threefold cord marriage is a marriage between a man and a woman and God, and it's one that stems from the heart and is rooted in trust. How many of you know that a good marriage just doesn't happen? You have to invest in it, both husband and wife. Contrary to what some people think, a happy home does not just happen. There's a lot of prayer. There's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of conversation. Billy Graham said that one of the keys to having a successful Christian marriage is two people knowing how to forgive one another. And that is true. But how beautiful it is when husbands and wives trust the Lord and each other. There is so much peace in that. And here, Lemuel's mother is telling her about the kind of woman that would give peace to her husband. No fear of her spoiling anything in the household. She will be a contributor. She will be an asset to the home. Notice, she will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. Why? All the days of her life? Because when you say the vows, and God forbid, and it's tragic that divorce happens, one of the things that you say in one way, shape, or form, for better or for worse, sickness and health, richer or poorer, till death do us part. She will do him good. A godly woman is an asset, not a liability to her husband. She manages the household well. We've already seen in many of the Proverbs explains the bad effect of a bad wife. A foolish woman plucks down her home. She nags. She argues. The opposite is true. A virtuous woman does her husband good and not evil. And she continues to be a blessing all the days of her life and of his life. She seeks wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. Not grudgingly. Willingly. Her role and her duty as a wife are not a burden but a delight. And I would say that the same should hold true for the husband as well. She works willingly with her hands. How beautiful it is to see a virtuous woman at work. I've said it many times before, and I'll say it again. I'm married to Pandora. My wife, I don't need to have Christian radio. She just sings. She cooks and she sings. She irons and she sings. I come walking into the door and she sings, God help me. No. But and it's so natural. It's not forced willingly. You know, when the Bible gives instructions on giving, when Paul writes to the Corinthians, he says, God loves a cheerful giver. And how beautiful it is when you have two that are married in the Lord, who love the Lord supremely, and they are one another's absolute best friends. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She's a thrifty shopper, and she looks for a bargain both near and far. You go riding around, and she never misses a garage sale sign. I can get this item at this store for this much cheaper. I go, yep, go get them, girl. She looks for a bargain. She's like merchant's ships. She rises also, I love this, while it is night, and gives meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. Because back then, kings would often have maidens. And notice this, she rises while it is night. She's married to the king, or in this context, doesn't have to be, but here's the idea. She's not lying in bed. She's not ringing a bell and waiting for the servants to attend to her. Rather, she rises and by providing for the servants, multiplies her effectiveness. This gal is sharp. This gal is industrious. And no doubt it's not mentioned here. I'm sure that she does a whole lot of praying during the day and during the night. She considers a field and buys it. And with the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. So she's a wise investor. And she even finds the time to plant a vineyard. Why? In order to cut costs of food down. You get the idea what kind of a gal this is? You guys that are here and you're not married, look at this checklist. Her submission to her husband's authority does not forbid her to engage in business for the sake of the household. David Guzik says, the various tasks described in verses 13 through 16 does not mean that she does all these things in a day or even in a week, but it does point to how much work and how many different kinds of work are involved in wisely and properly managing a home. There's a lot to make a home work. Isn't there, ladies? There's a lot to make a home work. All of the things that this virtuous woman does. Verse 17, she girds her loins with strength and strengtheneth her arms. The virtuous woman is a woman of incredible strength. She's got incredible energy. To put on or clothe with a belt around the waist symbolizes preparation for action. She's always thinking about what she's going to do next. She's prudent. This virtuous woman is not a weak woman. She's competent. She's strong because she's strong in the spirit. She perceives, verse 18, that her merchandise is good. Her candle goes not out by night. She lays her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the staff. In other words, she will look for ways to mend or make clothing in order to make the most of her husband's income. You see how thrifty she is? She is a good steward of what is provided for her by her God, by her husband. This virtuous woman is much more than a skillful manager or homemaker. She's also a woman of great compassion. She stretches out her hands to the poor. Yea, she stretches forth her hands to the needy. She's not afraid of the snow. I don't want to mention that, but it's coming. She's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. In other words, this woman anticipates weather changes. She makes the proper adjustment well ahead of time to not get caught off guard. The Hebrew for scarlet here is an interesting word. It suggests a double thickness. It doesn't have anything to do really with the color. So she's thinking ahead. She's thinking, okay, it's going to be cold, and now you know what you do, ladies. Out comes the clothing that was boxed for the summer, and now here they are, the boots, the heavier shirts, the sweaters, the hoods, you know, the gloves and everything, right there. That's what she does. She makes herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk, in purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. I would only add here that her husband could not be known in the gates or a place of prominence apart from having a God-fearing wife. Her prominence in the home and activity within the community forms the foundation of her husband's respected position among the elders at the city gate. And so this woman is not only an asset to her husband and the family, she's also an asset that makes him able to be in a place of prominence, a place of leadership. It's been said that behind every fruitful man, you can be sure that there is a fruitful, praying, godly woman. She makes fine linen and sells it, and delivers girdles unto the merchant. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. Notice, strength and honor are her clothing. So you could say that when it comes to character, she's one of the best dressed women in town. But what does she wear? She's clothed with strength. She's clothed with honor. That's beautiful. She does not find her identity in being fashionable. I'm sure, knowing this gal, that she probably dresses well, dresses properly, but that wasn't how she found her identity. She found her identity in who she was as a daughter of the king. She found her identity in being in that role of being that wife that would make sure to come along Adam. Remember, Eve was brought to Adam because Adam was looking for a helpmeet. This gal is a helpmeet. Bless the Lord, oh my soul, bless
His holy, His wonderful. Join us on Monday at 6:30 p.m. as we complete this study on Sila, a daily study in the Scriptures with Pastor Ray Viola.
Kids from 4 to 10 years old are invited to a one-day BBS on Saturday, August 9th at Koinonia Fellowship in East Rochester. Gather up the kids in the neighborhood and join us as we learn about the gospel and have fun playing games, making crafts, and singing songs about the love of Jesus. This magnified one-day BBS is from 9 a.m. until 2:30 p.m. and includes a complete lunch. Saturday, August 9th at Koinonia Fellowship in East Rochester. Stick around after for more free food, a bounce house, and games next door at Edmund Lyon Park. Register today at koinoniafellowship.com. See you there.
Do you have a Bible question? Do you need to talk with someone or have someone pray with you? If you do, we invite you to visit our website at selaonradio.com and click on the live chat button. We'd love to hear from you. Audio and video downloads of all Pastor Ray's teachings can be accessed at koinoniafellowship.com. You can subscribe to Pastor Ray's blog at selaonradio.com and receive a daily devotional by email. We welcome you to join us for Sunday morning and Wednesday evening services at Koinonia Fellowship. Our address is 500 Main Street, East Rochester, New York. Service times are 8:30 and 10:30 Sunday morning and 7 p.m. on Wednesday. This program has been brought to you by Koinonia Fellowship.